So when we're trying to define leadership, my question to you is management leadership or is leadership management? We're looking at chapter 10 in Fundamentals of Management in the textbook Samson, and this is Management 101 at Sheridan College. So let's look on page 467 at the nature of leadership. Leadership defined in this textbook is the ability to influence people towards the attainment of organizational goals. So we started looking at leadership last week and we tried to define it. And I think the word influence was really highlighted in our discussions last week. We tried to define leadership in the examples of Mother Teresa and Nelson Mandela. And what was the main theme or thread, or what was the main thing they achieved? Well, they were people of influence, weren't they? And they, through their influence, they changed people's minds and hearts, and they influenced literally governments and nations. So without influence, it's hard to lead. And of course, it's hard to lead if you don't have any followers. Now, I also raised the issue of this whole false leadership that's created on social media. So for example, if you have Instagram followers, are you a leader? I think that's questionable because what kind of influence do you have? And what are you using that influence for? So I think that we need to be specific in our definition of leadership, and we need to question, for example, the outcome of that leadership. What are the goals, the values, the virtues, the characteristics of that leader? Okay, so on page 468, leadership is further defined as the ability to influence people towards the attainment of goals. So in every organization, every project, there are goals, there are outcomes that you're trying to achieve. So one of the interesting things about leadership these days is that it's not necessarily face-to-face. So there are a lot of kind of interactions that particularly workplace interactions that take place online. So if you don't have a boss looking over your shoulder, does that mean that you're not accountable to a leader? Well, not necessarily. So Samson deals with that on page 468. He goes through this concept of bossless does not mean leaderless. We can all lead by example. If we communicate with purpose and meaning, create an climate of trust. Trust is so essential to leadership. If we look for results, not salutes, if we take calculated risks and generate unity, you are coming closer to a place of leading and influencing people. So level five leadership is a concept that's been around for a while, and study conducted by Jim Collins and his research associates identified the critical importance of what Collins called level five leadership in transforming companies from merely good to truly great organizations. So how do you become a level five leader? Well, there are a few characteristics that you need to attain or to develop a few virtues. So I strongly agree that humility is so central to being a good leader. Everyone's had a boss that has narcissistic tendencies. Everyone's had a boss that is about the ego, the pride, the name, the title. How effective are they as leaders? And what kind of influence do they wield? Well, not very positive, actually. So their leadership and their influence can actually be destructive. And we see this in national leaders, right? We see this in totalitarian dictatorships. We're seeing it at the moment. So that kind of leadership does exist, but it is a destructive force, let's just say. So I think the balance to that is to focus on virtues such as humility. So being a person. So what is humility? Well, humility is a really interesting concept because this concept of false humility exists, right? False humility is thinking less of yourself. That's not humility at all. Humility is putting others before yourself, not thinking less of yourself. There's a big difference. We don't put ourselves down as leaders. That's not humility. But we put others forward. Does that make sense? You're encouraging others. You're developing others. You are serving others, right? This is humility. But putting yourself down is self-deprecation. Like, that's just silly. That's not humility or leadership. So this concept of servant leadership is touched on in Samson on page 471. And it's defined as a leader transcending self-interest to serve others, the organization, and society itself. And we see these attributes and qualities in leaders such as Nelson Mandela and Mother Teresa. So they transcended their concept of self. So they weren't about the title, they weren't about the money, they were not focused on their own prestige, but they were focused on changing the lives of others. So in Mother Teresa's case, the poor, the disadvantaged. In Nelson Mandela's case, the political structures, you know, fairness and equality for all. So these are great examples, I think, of servant, humble leadership at play. Leaders have to be authentic. If leaders are not transparent, open, communicative, it's really hard to relate to them or to trust them, right? And so we can see for ourselves what works in the people that lead us. And then we can develop these skills within ourselves. So I think authentic leadership is key alongside humility and servant leadership, as well as great communication skills in building and developing trust. And once you do this, it's very easy to then influence people because you've built their trust. You're open and transparent. You're there to serve them. You're humble about it. Why wouldn't you want to, you know, follow a leader like that? They're inspiring. So authentic leadership is defined as individuals who know and understand themselves, who espouse and act consistently with high order ethical values, and who empower and inspire others with their openness and authenticity. So the authentic leader diagram there on page 472 might be helpful for you to envisage this. So they pursue purpose with a passion, they practice solid values, they connect with others, they demonstrate self-discipline, they lead with their hearts as well as their heads. That's so important. Some leaders are imbalanced in that. We looked at this transactional versus transformational, thank you, leadership. So if you look at it, it's almost like transactional leadership is the head, right? It's all about the logic and the numbers, but the transformational comes from the heart. So we looked at how important it is to have that balance and how transformational leadership actually transforms in the long term, whereas transactional is very short term focused. So remember that when you think about leading with the head and the heart. Question for you. Do you think that men lead differently to women? You can be politically non-correct here. It's okay. It's a safe space. Look, I think they do because we're built differently. We're just wired differently, right? We process emotion and relationship differently. And, you know, we can obviously develop similar skills and similar professional development attributes. But at the end of the day, men and women do tend to have different approaches in leadership. So Samson deals with this concept of interactive leadership, which is a focus on minimizing personal ambition and developing others. So interactive leadership means that the leader favors a consensual and collaborative process, and influence derives from relationships rather than position, power, and formal authority. So in other words, we're getting rid of the hierarchy. It doesn't mean or it doesn't matter if you're the cleaner in the organization, your opinion counts. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the intern, you know, on the team, your creative capabilities and contributions matter. So it's that kind of concept. So I think this form of interactive leadership is really important. Okay, so let's go to page 475. How do you then transition from management to leadership? And what are the differences between leadership and management? Think about that for a moment. That diagram on page 475 might help you. The manager qualities that are listed there include rational, maintaining stability, assigning tasks, organizing, analyzing, and maintaining a position of power. So if we think of these as managerial qualities, they're very transactional in nature, aren't they? The manager is transacting a process, right? Let's look at the leadership qualities that are listed there. The focus is more on people. They are visionaries, they promote change, they define purpose, they nurture, innovate. And there's this sense of personal power. So it's not derived from their title. They don't necessarily have to be the CEO to be the leader, right? So this is a very transformational person, isn't it? And skill. So note those differences, but also note the similarities. Can you be a leader without having management skills? That's a great question, isn't it? Because if you're inspiring change and you're casting the vision, but you can't actually get the job done, you're kind of going to fall flat in your face in a week. It's not going to get very far. So on the bottom of page 475, Google's founder hired Eric Schmidt as CEO in 2001. This is a company example of leadership and management. So Schmidt had leadership qualities that fitted with Google's need for innovation and change to keep the company thriving. So his leadership principles can be summarized in the following five precepts on page 476. Number one, get to know your employees. Number two, create new ways to reward and promote high performance. Number three, let employees own the problems that you want them to solve. Huge key there. When an employee comes to meet with you as a manager, expect them to, number one, paint a landscape of the problem for you. Number two, provide a solution for that problem. Otherwise, don't meet with them until they do. And we should always do that as well as employees. Number four, allow people to function outside their hierarchy. Number five, have employees' performance reviews reviewed by someone who they respect for their objectivity. So when we talk about leadership traits, there may be some traits that are really apparent to you that leaders should have. For example, what kind of a person should the Prime Minister be? So traits are the distinguishing personal characteristics of a leader, such as intelligence, honesty, self-confidence, and even appearance. The early research looked at leaders who had achieved a level of greatness and hence were referred to as the great man approach. The idea was relatively simple. Find out what made these people great and select future leaders who already exhibited the same traits or could be trained to develop them. Generally, early research found only a weak relationship between personal traits and leader success. So one way of putting this into practice is to think about who you went to school with. Those many, many years ago. Can you remember some of your classmates? Can you remember their personalities? Who stood out to you? Can you remember in class who you thought, wow, they are going to be someone great in their life? Or you thought, they are an inspiring leader. I wonder what they will do with their life. Where are they now? Are they leaders? And have you heard from some of your classmates? And what did they achieve in their life? Were some of the quiet ones the ones that achieved great things in their lives and surprised you? So it's a really fascinating, study in social science. So Samson deals with behavioral approaches in relation to leadership. And of course, when we consider behavioral approaches, it's important again to think about task versus people or transformational versus transactional leadership. On page 478, the leadership grid gives us an example of this in practice. So when we look at the leadership grid, it's a two-dimensional leadership theory that measures the leader's concern for people and for production. So if you're so concerned about people that no one's getting any work done, it's going to lose the company money. But if you're so concerned about outcomes and money that you don't care about the people, people are not going to be motivated to actually work hard for you. So you have to have a balance. So you can see there the rating, and the lowest rating is 1.1 in the bottom left-hand corner. And it's called the impoverished management. And this is an exertion of minimum effort to get required work done, appropriate to sustain organizational membership. And we may have all worked in places like this, right? You do the bare minimum. It's uninspiring. It's boring. It's dull. It's difficult work. But the top rated approach is found on the top right-hand corner, and it's called team management. And it's work accomplishment from committed people with interdependence through a common stake in organizational purposes, and they lead to relationships of trust and respect. Wow, I want to be part of that team. So you can see the massive difference right there. And again, this is task versus people, transactional versus transformational. So you can see this in practice through that leadership grid there. So think about the environments you've worked in and what kind of leaders have inspired you and what kind of a leader you want to be and how that translates to management skills. So on page 480, we talk about contingency approaches. So does your leadership style or management style change based on situations that you're faced with? So the situational model is a contingency approach to leadership that links the leader's behavioral style with the task readiness of employees. So as leaders and managers, a lot of our training of our staff has to occur on a daily basis before the crisis hits, before they need to use that skill. For example, that's why we have fire wardens at work. That's why we have HR team. That's why we have first aid representatives, because they are trained and prepared for that crisis. And it's the same, you know, relationally and financially. You prepare them and you ready them for whatever may come their way. If you're not preparing your staff, for example, to deal with growth or to deal with an influx of job, then human behavior says they're not going to cope. They're going to freak out. They might feel stressed, go on sick leave, whatever, which is a loss to your company and a fraction to the team and the loss of relationship as well. So on page 481, there is a situational model of leadership developed by these theorists, Hersey and Blanchard. And it's an extension of the behavioral theory summarized in the leadership grid that we just looked at. So this approach focuses a great deal of attention on the characteristics of followers in determining appropriate leadership behavior. The point of the situational model is that subordinates vary in readiness, which is determined by the degree of willingness and ability a subordinate demonstrates with while performing a specific task. So willingness refers to a combination of confidence, commitment, motivation, and a follower may be high or low on any of those three variables. So abilities of the employee refers to the amount of knowledge, experience, and demonstrated skill a subordinate brings to the task. So you can see the chart there on page 481. Okay, so Fielder's contingency theory is discussed on page 482. So Fielder and his associates looked at some other elements of the organizational situation in assessing when one leadership style is more effective than another. So the starting point for the theory is the extent to which the leader's style is task-oriented or relationship-oriented. So there is a process of matching the leader style to the situation. So again, we can see this in practice with how our Prime Minister has responded to the crises in Australia. First of all, there were bushfires across Christmas and New Year's. He's on holidays with his family. His Prime Minister, he hardly gets a day off, you know, and he's, you know, trying to celebrate his wedding anniversary with his wife and spend time with his children. And he's called back home, obviously, to deal with the crises. And we can see how he and his team are now dealing with coronavirus, you know, to respond to the safety of Australians. And then, of course, the economic threats to our nation as well. So you can see his leadership style here. And also how he has had to modify his leadership. For example, one of the things that the government announced is they're not going to release a budget. So usually the Treasury and finance departments are working around the clock to release a budget in about May every year to show economic projections for the nation, right? That makes sense. We want to know what the budget is, where the money's going, that the government's spending. But he's delayed that until October this year. That is a measured response, right? If he didn't do that, it would put him in a very difficult situation where at the moment you can't project what's happening economically. And it's like that in our private lives as well at the moment. We can't foresee in the next few months, you know, what's going to happen. Therefore, it's hard to plan financially. So yeah, we all need to make contingency plans. So that's an example of how he's modified his leadership based on the situation. So Samson then on page 485 talks about situational substitutes. So a substitute for leadership makes the leadership style unnecessary or redundant. For example, highly professional subordinates who know how to do their tasks do not need a leader who initiates structure for them and tells them what to do. A neutralizer counteracts the leadership style and prevents a leader from displaying certain behaviors. For example, if a leader has absolutely no position power or physical removed from subordinates, the leader's ability to give direction to subordinates is greatly reduced. So can you think of an example for a substitute for a leader? For example, are you a person that walks into a room and you can see what needs to do happen? If you walk into a meeting and the meeting starts taking place and people start talking, are you a natural problem solver? You can see problems arising, but you can also imagine some solutions for it. This means that you are a natural leader, and it's this kind of substitute for a leadership concept, because you may not necessarily, again, be the CEO of the company, but you see the problems and you see some solutions for it. So there is a great summary of some of the concepts that are discussed and the theories that are discussed in this chapter on page 487. So there's that golden box that says, remember this. So read that as a summary for some of the concepts we've discussed in this leadership chapter, chapter 10. The chapter then goes on to discuss charismatic and transformational leadership. So charismatic leaders tend to be less predictable because they create an atmosphere of change. They may be obsessed with visionary ideas that excite, stimulate, and drive other people to work harder. One of the best known charismatic leaders in the world, apparently, is Barack Obama. Can you think of any charismatic leaders in your world that you can think of? So transformational versus transactional leadership is discussed on page 490. Transformational leadership is defined as a leader distinguished by a special ability to bring about innovation and change. Remember, they're influencing people. They're leading them by influence, by a vision. They are about change, either changing a person's life or a circumstance or a situation. Whereas transactional leaders are leaders who clarify employees' roles, tasks, requirements. They initiate structure, they provide rewards, display consideration for employees. There's still a relational element there, but they're very task-oriented. So, again, you cannot be a leader without having followers. So, what does a followership look like? Page 492. You may have some leaders that have followers who are passive. Some followers might be conformists. Yes, people. Do whatever. Some followers might feel alienated, whether geographically or psychologically, emotionally. And some followers are effective. So that kind of... our chart, style of followership, is laid out on page 492. It's important for your followers to be critical thinkers. So critical thinkers will add value to a leadership team because they are brainstorming, they're problem solvers, they're thinking independently, they're being mindful of the effect of, the behaviours and the goals. So these followers are listed on page 493 and defined. The alienated follower, the conformist, the pragmatic survivor, the passive follower, the effective follower. They are all described there and defined. So in the context of leadership, what does power and influence look like? And to what extent should a leader have power and influence? What is power? Well, it's defined in this text as the potential ability to influence the behavior of others, whereas influence is defined as the effect that a person's actions have on the attitudes, values, beliefs, or behaviors of others. So, both power and influence arguably are important for leaders to have, but there are different types of power. So there's a few listed on page 495. There's legitimate power, which is power that stems from a formal position in an organization. So the authority is given to that person, right? It's delegated. It's legitimate. CEO, CFO, those are perfect examples. What about reward power? Power that results from the authority to reward others. There's coercive power that stems from the authority to punish or recommend punishment. We see that obviously in things like law enforcement. And then there's personal soft power that's described. Soft power can be, a colleague of yours that influences your decision making by giving you example or evidence, convincing you what you should believe. And then there's expert power, power that stems from specialized knowledge or skills. So, for example, an accountant is expert power. Referent power is described as power that results from the characteristics that commands employees' identification, respect, and admiration so that they wish to emulate the leader. So other sources of power are listed as personal effort, network or relationship-based power, information. So if you have information that others don't. And then there is a consideration of the interpersonal influence tactics that are exercised. So on page 497, these are listed as six interpersonal influence tactics for leaders. So at number one, you use rational persuasion 2, you help people to like you. 3, you rely on the rule of reciprocity. 4, you develop allies. 5, you're assertive, you ask for what you want. 6, you make use of higher authority. So all together, these are listed as greater influence. And those are defined and described further on page 498. So in summary, page 499, power is the potential ability to influence the behavior of others. All leaders use power to influence people and accomplish organizational goals. Influence is the effect a person's actions have on the attitudes, values, beliefs, or behaviors of others. Legitimate power is power that stems from a manager's formal position in an organization and the authority granted by that position. Reward power results from the authority to bestow rewards. Coercive power stems from the authority to punish or recommend punishment. Expert power is power that results from a leader's specialized knowledge or skill. Referent power results from the characteristics that command subordinates' identification with respect and admiration for and desire to emulate the leader. And both leaders and followers can tap into other sources of power, including personal effort, networks of relationships, access to control or overt information, over information. Leaders use a wide range of interpersonal influence tactics, and people who use a wide variety of tactics are typically perceived as having greater power. So subject to coronavirus, one of the things that I would recommend you guys do is to connect with, if you're interested in business and business management, leadership, you know, HR, is to join business networks. You know, get around business community leaders here in Perth, learn from them, ask them to mentor you, coach you, and attend their events. There are women's business leadership summits and networks and conferences, so you can be a part of all those. And as a student, that's a really powerful thing to do because they often lead to job opportunities, internships, or just connections. So the power of networking is really important as a leader and an influencer. It's often in those informal places where you make the right connections, you meet the right people, and you can influence situations.